Welcome to the Perfect First Layer Podcast, a bi-weekly podcast where we answer questions from you, the 3D printing community. I'm Guy from Guy's Shop, and as always, with me are my co-hosts, JJ and Nathan.
Hello. Hello.
I was really hoping that was going to be the first time you got through the whole intro without messing up.
I do it a lot. I get through it a lot.
Often.
More than I screw it up.
Okay.
You know I'm going to cut all this out.
Oh, yeah.
And we do depend on your questions for this podcast. So if you have one for our panel, please go to perfectfirstlayer.com, go to the submit page and send it. We also have a Patreon. Right now, we only have one level and we're simply asking for a small donation to help keep this podcast going. So please go to patreon.com/perfectfirstlayer. And we do need questions. We've got a handful left and it really helps us out to have a bunch of questions to pick from as we're going through and planning the show. So send them on. So what do you got going on the lab right now, JJ?
Yeah, so doing some regular printing as normal. Then I just got in a new big shipment from the company Fanatec. They make sim racing equipment. I've made some videos on upgrading Logitech racing wheels and stuff, and then I emailed them and they sent me over a whole big old kit, so I'll be 3D printing F1 wheels and other
things. A big video game enthusiast?
I enjoy playing video games. I also like F1, and so F1 just started back up the new season, so let's reach out to them.
What's the guy's name from Australia, Teaching Tech? What's his name? He's big enough.
Michael. My name's Michael from Teaching Tech.
He's
started a second channel where it's his racing channel.
He's driving a race car now.
Oh, that's kind of cool. You know,
that's really cool. Yeah.
Follow your dreams. Did you ever want to be a F1 driver, JJ?
No, I just got into it as most people, the Netflix show. And I saw it and I was like, oh, this is awesome. And now I'm into it. And playing the game.
Ford versus Ferrari is pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
Got me into racing a little.
I've seen it, but I've heard good things about it. Yeah.
So that's about it? Just working on that stuff? Is there going to be videos about it?
Yeah. Several videos, hopefully.
Yeah, cool.
And still working on the Ender 3 V3 video.
Are you having problems or?
Or I was like sick for a week and then once you're like, I feel like once I'm halfway through a video and then going back to it, I'm just like, I just need to refilm the whole thing. Because like going back to old footage afterwards, my hair's grown an inch since I should have said it differently. I should have this or that. And like you're always like second guessing yourself, or at least I do. So
yeah.
I just need to refilm and redo the whole thing. I think it would be better than struggling through a long edit process.
I did get an Ender 3 V3.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And I spent a weekend just printing stuff out, you know, randomly when I wasn't doing anything. So I'll start another one here.
Yeah.
And color me impressed. It's a nice little printer. It's loud.
Yeah. Mm.
It's loud.
It's pretty loud.
It's loud, fans. But it prints really well.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised with how well it prints. I've only printed PLA in it, but it does a great job.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very solid. Very similar to the, like, I feel like it's, my whole review is, it's a K1C vertical.
Yeah.
Print quality wise.
Can they call it the K1CV?
Yeah, the vertical version of it. I think it should be the Ender 4 or something. Like they should finally change the name beyond Ender 3. Because so many people have such negative connotation to Ender 3s in the past. And like the new Ender 3s are so much better. And it's like, I think they should move past it to be like, it's better, it's new, it's something else.
I was really amazed at the build quality of that thing, the cast frame and everything. It was it was really nice.
Yeah,
it's well made. So, what about you, Nathan? What do you got going on in the lab?
Well, I just do my thing, you know, mostly.
What's your thing?
Yeah, I went up in yesterday. I was up at Luke's lab filming with him. He builds 3D printers like professionally and sells them to companies to like produce large printed objects. But he's got a lot
really, really big benchies.
Yeah, basically. I mean, that's what all the companies want to know is how fast can it print a benchie?
Yeah. That's,
no, they're more interested. They're more interested in like printing practical parts and having strong parts.
I dig it.
So it was fun talking to him, especially because a lot of the people in 3D printing, like in this hobby, don't have too much of an engineering background. But him and I get along on talking about the modulus of elasticity and the resonant, you know, properties of frames.
Are you making them words up?
I'm only making, I mean, you can Google it afterwards. No, they're mostly okay. Real words.
Most of engineering is making words up. So,
yeah. And
getting people to believe it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So I'm going to be releasing a video about that, maybe a couple, just because cool. It's a little too much chatting going on for one video.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. It's my fault.
Yeah. No, you weren't there, so I can't blame you for it, but we can definitely blame you on the podcast.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So I didn't do anything since we talked. Actually, I went on vacation.
Oh, nice. There you go.
Oh, yeah, you got a tan.
Yeah, I did. It was very sunny where I was. So I got nothing done.
Did you at least get any ideas of things you can 3D print when you go home? Because, you know, you're out there sitting on the beach like, oh, man, what am I going to 3D print when I get back?
No.
Or man, I should have put my V0 and my carry on.
No, I wasn't thinking about that at all. Trust me.
All right.
Trust me. I was just wondering how much booze I could bring back from the duty-free shop.
Nice.
That's my only concern. So ready to get into some questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Let me find the first one here. This comes from James. And James, as you know, sent us a bunch of questions. So we pick one every now and then from him. So James asks, he says, it seems to me that 3D printer market is going to split into two types, the enclosed ecosystem like Apple and the open source type Android. Companies like Bamboo want the enclosed ecosystem to build appliances that maximize profit potential. And he says he's okay with that because there is good value to consumers for products that just work. And you guys clearly like your P1Ps and P1Ss. Is he talking about us?
You must have us confused with someone else.
Well, I like my P1P. It's not the greatest thing since sliced bread, but it's nice.
Yeah, I have a P1P. I don't really use it too much anymore just because
you broke it on day one. You ripped it apart and it's never worked the same.
Hey, it broke itself. Probably. Yeah.
All right.
As far as I know.
He says, my only problem with that is the loss of privacy and control of the Bamboo's network. It's a no-go for me. And like Nathan, I work offline and I never want to own a machine that requires online access to operate. I got the impression there's a way around that, but Bamboo makes it difficult. Could you expand on what workarounds there are for people like me who don't want to drink the Kool-Aid? JJ, I'm going to let you go first.
Yeah, it is there is a workaround of using a micro SD card to slice the files and take it over there. For me, I like the local ecosystem, and I even more like people who use Give It To You. Like Creality uses the Clipper option of giving it to you and saying it's on your network. And so it's only between your computer and your printer using your Wi-Fi network. It doesn't require an external cloud to be able to send the print over. I am more on the side of I'm okay with using Bamboo's cloud. I would like if they didn't have it, but
yeah.
Well,
you can use it without using the cloud. You go into LAN only mode and you do a couple things on your printer and you shut it off from the internet, and it'll go through it directly to your printer.
Yes, but then every time you turn the printer off and back on again,
it loses it that.
Needs you to re-enter that. I can't remember how many digits long that code is.
Eight, ten digits.
10-digit code. You've got to re-enter on the slicer to reconnect to your printer again. So for me, ease of use wise, I just have it connected to the cloud because my files are mostly from printables and thangs.com, and there's nothing proprietary or secret that I'm hiding by sending it differently.
Yeah, and if you do make something, it's just something to do something that doesn't really have much value. Except
it's a little clip that fits under my desk that perfectly fits my drawer. Cool.
Exactly.
If Bamboo wants it, they can have it. I don't care.
Have at it.
Yeah.
Now, I know you've got another take on this, Nathan.
I mean, basically, I just don't like printers being connected to the internet at all. We just had recently AnyCubic. They had I don't know if it was a data breach or what, but basically someone hacked into their servers and sent a piece of G code to everyone saying, hey, your machine has been hacked. You should unplug it from the internet right now.
Really?
Because someone could do something bad to you if they wanted to.
That's
I'm a nice guy, so we're not going to do anything. Just please unplug it. So
that's embarrassing.
Yeah, there's like security vulnerabilities, and I'm not sure what kind of budget these companies have for securing their over the internet communications. Mm-hmm. I think Bamboo Lab is probably, they seem to be more competent with the cloud stuff, but at the same time, they're collecting a lot of cloud data, and you know, I'm not going to say they're doing anything nefarious with it, but if they wanted to, they could.
And they had that mistake. I mean, it's been months now, but there was the cloud sent out a command to every printer to reprint the last file still on
the
SD card or something. So every printer still connected printed the last file, or a bunch of printers,
yeah,
printed the last file still that was sent to the printer.
And that was kind of when it happened, it was kind of a shitstorm.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't think people are holding their feet to the fire enough. Like, everybody, all the big guys are getting, you know, pardon my language, but they're all getting paid off by Bamboo Lab in affiliate income. So, you know, if you speak out against that, then they might reconsider partnering with your channel, which, you know, I have experience with firsthand. So I think there's an issue with, like, transparency and honesty in the 3D printing, you know, the coverage that companies get. I don't know what the solution to that is. And sure, it's great that people are getting paid, but
I think most 3D printing YouTubers aren't big enough to, there's not a Linus Tech Tips or a MKBHD or a Mr. Beast or, you know, like the biggest 3D printing YouTubers, Makers Muse,
by
which is like just crossed a million or so, like, you know, audience reach in this is such a small niche of YouTube, basically.
Yeah.
It's kind of an interesting
size. Right. Yeah. But you'll hear people go off about like how company X or company Y did this wrong and they're, you know, going to cover it. Like, you know, there's like specific examples I could bring up, but.
Yeah,
I don't want to derail it too much.
Yeah,
I
just think that for sure.
There's kind of an issue with transparency, and it's something that, you know, the more I kind of wanted to do just 3D printing, and the more I narrowed down into this niche, the more I realized that was a bad idea because you're becoming completely dependent on these companies for your income. And then how do you speak out against those companies, or what do you say? It just ends up being everything gets candy coated. You know, nobody says bad things about the big companies that are dominant in the field. And then how does that inform the consumers, which is what I thought this was all about?
Yeah, I agree with that statement. And then I kind of disagree with it a little bit. I don't want to put anything out there where I get this just people start attacking me. I know it sounds like I'm a big pussy, but I'm not. I've just been there and I've said stuff and it's got me in, I don't want to say got me in trouble, but all of a sudden I'm getting, you know, emails and all this hate and vitriol thrown at it. It's like, I don't want it.
Yeah.
So I think in the last 6 months, I have sent back two printers, three printers, four printers, and two laser machines because they're garbage.
Yeah, and that's
and
an
I just refused. I told them, I just refused. I'm not going to do a video on this. Issue a call tag and pick it up because I don't want to put this thing on my channel that's just nothing but negative about the product.
Yeah,
that's what I would have to do. You know what I mean?
I'm at the same place with that. I recently had a printer on. It had some issues, and I spent like 3 days trying to fix it, 4 days. And those are 4 days that, you know, I'm
never
not
get back.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, it's a complete waste of time. Yep. And the only way I could quote unquote salvage that time that I spent would be to force out a video, just completely shitting on this company and being like,
yep,
you know, this sucked. This printer, you basically shouldn't buy it. Anyone who's telling you to buy it is a freaking liar.
Well, this last laser printer, it was a laser engraver I got. It was a very nice one. It was an expensive one. And I spent a weekend on it. You know, 2 days of my time, a whole weekend.
Yeah.
I still couldn't get it to work. So I just said, take it back. Well, we'll send you another one. I don't want another one. I don't want to spend any more time on this. Well, we'll pay you. I don't care. I don't want it here.
Yeah.
I will throw it out or you can issue a tag to pick it up. Or I'll keep it and post a really bad review. It's your choice. And then they finally sent me a call tag. We really got off the rails, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's my fault. Our listeners should not have to listen to us talk about YouTube and this kind of crap. So back to James' question about, you know, protecting your IP over an open network or on the internet with some of these printers. I brought this up once about OrcaSlicer. It uses the same Bamboo network plugin that Bamboo Slicer does. So when you log, if you're not using Bamboo printers and you're using OrcaSlicer and that network manager, that stuff's going to the cloud.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Uh-huh.
If you're printing over the cloud, then it's 100% going to the cloud. Yeah. I'm not sure what kind of data they pull randomly from your slicer when you're using the Bamboo network plugin.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? It's owned by Bamboo.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's closed
you don't
source.
Know. And it's closed source. So.
Yeah. The reason I got into this whole diatribe, if you'll want to call it that, is this kind of stuff isn't getting covered by the big channels.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think?
Really.
We can't be the only ones talking about this.
I think we are. Maybe I mean, there's what... Grant from 3D Musketeers, but he's got his whole Bamboo Lab, anti-Bamboo Lab shtick.
Yeah, I've watched a couple of those videos. It's like, wow.
It's all about like YouTube doesn't get this long-form discussion back and forth between people. It doesn't happen on like a YouTube video is like, here's my one topic that I'm focused or I don't, that's what I think YouTube is.
Yeah.
I did this one experiment and here's my one experiment.
That's definitely how the format is in the 3D printing niche. But a lot of other channels that I watch do like, they call them like monologues or like video essays where they'll do deep dives into like the philosophy behind, you know, race car drivers or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe we need a little more of that. But anyways, on topic, we can do it.
Yeah, we really got off the weeds. But that's okay. We were still talking about 3D printing. So okay. So this next question comes from Leo. And this is a question that I think we get not that often, but every now and then, I think it's a good discussion. So anyways, it says, hello, new listener, first-time writer. I have an Ender 3 and Ender 3 V2 and a friend's CR10 Smart. I was wondering what your recommendations would be to upgrade one of the Enders to print either TPU or ABS ASA. I could go either direction, really. I think it's an interesting conversation for some of these filaments on open frame printers, which we talk about a little bit, but I don't know if we've ever gone to a deep dive on it.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on TPU on some of these machines here, Nathan?
Well, TPU can be printed on basically anything that PLA can be printed on.
However,
it has to have a direct drive or a really short Bowden tomb path. That definitely helps out. And you probably just want to make sure your print settings are right before you start a long print job. One issue is if you're trying to extrude too quickly, the filament can get wrapped around the extruder gear, and that can take, depending on the extruder design, that can take like 5 to 20 minutes to rectify.
There was a time when I knew probably less than I know now, which is not much, it's just insane much. And I had the Ender 3 V2 with the Bowden tube, and I actually printed TPU on it through the Bowden tube because I didn't know any better.
Yeah, I've done the same.
I just shoved it in there, hit the button, and said, okay, and it printed fine.
Right.
And then I started about, oh, this is hard to print. And all of a sudden, I couldn't print it right anymore.
Yeah. If you're doing 95A, that can handle, it handles like a PETG or PLA.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're doing softer stuff like 92A or anything below that, then you really start running into issues, I find.
Who can give our audience a good definition of what those numbers mean, like the shore hardness, 85, 92?
If you Google like a shore hardness scale, which I'm going to do right now, they'll give you real world examples of plastics and materials that are certain hardnesses. So 95A is relatively the same hardness as a shopping cart wheel.
What? I guess my question is, does that mean?
So like squeezing a tennis ball versus like pulling a rubber band. The difference of like one is like it's squishy but still really firm versus like squishy but has some malleability.
What's the most common shore hardness of TPU? It's 95, isn't it?
Yeah, 95A. So that's that shopping cart wheel hardness. So everybody go down to your local grocery store and start licking the shopping cart wheels.
Just it makes bite some pretty firm malleability. Like it's flexible, but it's
not
compared to
flexible.
Like a 90 shore hardness. The 90 is like really flexible, but there's a huge difference between 90 and 95.
I've seen like 85. That's got to be like really super.
That would be
nothing.
Yeah, let me give some examples off of this shore hardness scale. Okay. So 95 shopping cart wheel. I know we're all tired of hearing about the shopping cart wheels. 80 is a shoe heel. So pick up your shoe and feel how squishy that is. 70 is tire tread. 40 is a pencil eraser, and 20 is a rubber band. And
But that's the hardness. That doesn't necessarily have to do with flexibility, correct?
Well, compliance is the inverse of stiffness. So there, you can say hardness or softness or whatever you want. Mm-hmm. You can translate from one to the other.
I can tell you how that relates to wood.
Tell me.
There's a,
next let's talk about glue.
No, there is this thing they do with wood, and they call it the jank hard test. Mm-hmm. And they drop a metal ball from a specified height, and they measure the hole or the dent it makes in the wood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they rate the hardness of lumber. I guess what I was asking is, what does that 95A mean? Because it's got to mean they have to have some kind of testing baseline to do this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually it has to do with how deep you take a solid block of material and you poke it with a certain force.
Okay,
and you
see how so it's the same thing as the wood, similar but they're using
yeah. different yeah, apparatus. The engineering term is modulus of elasticity, but
he's making that
modulus. That yeah, but usually they'll talk about things in terms of shore hardness. So you'll have shore hardness on the A scale or the D scale or the O scale.
Hmm.
So yeah, I mean that those probably predate like our standardized units of measurement for it.
Right.
And it just puts it into terms that are easier to understand for people that are, you know, dealing with those numbers all day.
Well, I know I have two rolls of TPU. I've got a roll of gray and like a blue. And every now and then I find a need for something in TPU, like seals and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I print them out of that and they're fine. Or I'll design like a little ring. So all I have to do is cut it and put it in there.
What are you sealing?
I don't have to print it. Like little containers. Little
no
jars.
Head gaskets mm-hmm. or
no
propane tanks.
No, nothing like that. Nothing like that. Just I did one last week for the gas line band. for the stove though.
Are you kidding?
Of course I'm kidding.
Because someone on Twitter,
it's like, oh no,
I'll get into names, but I'm a little bit active on Twitter nowadays. Someone on Twitter posted a picture of they were missing a seal for their propane tank.
Oh my gosh! They're like, 3D printed it.
Yeah, they've 3D printed one out and posted it online. And anyone that complained about the fact that he did that, he was like, "You guys are just virtue signaling, bunch of nerds on 3D printing Twitter, telling me I can't do this."
That's funny. That's funny.
And it's like, all right, well, I don't know what to tell you at this point. Just go for it. I responded as like, I just 3D printed some new brake pads for my car. They fit perfectly.
Anyway, thanks for explaining perfect. That because I never really understood what all those numbers meant. Yeah. I know it's a number. It's got to do some kind of testing, but I never knew what it was. Mm-hmm. Now, I have printed on an open frame printer ABS before. I just got my first roll of ASA like maybe 2 months ago. So I don't have a lot of experience with it. But ABS, I was printing on the Ender 3 V2, I wouldn't say regularly, but every now and then, and didn't have a problem.
Did you put a cardboard box on top of that printer?
No, I didn't.
Open air as well.
Or I can show you what I was printing it in.
Yeah.
Our viewers at home can't see this, but see this?
Just kind of in
over
a
here?
Cubby.
That's inside okay. a little stand.
Yeah.
And it's like a cabinet, like a kitchen cabinet, but it doesn't have a door on it and it's pretty deep.
Yeah.
And it sits in there so it doesn't get drafts.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that thing forever.
Yeah, that probably helps. Also, if you're printing smaller objects, it's much less of an issue. Like you can print polycarbonate and all sorts of traditionally difficult materials as long as they're kind of small.
Yeah.
How big were the parts you were printing?
Mostly parts for the Prusa.
Okay, so intermediate sized.
Yeah,
say.
Not huge, so but
pretty big.
I had a couple issues here and there, mm-hmm. but what I tried to do was print the stuff at night when I wasn't in the room.
Yeah, that sounds like a little bit of superstition.
No, I just didn't. I didn't want to smell it. And B, yeah, I knew, yeah. I heard that like walking by it and all that can cause problems. I figured it's best just turn it on, let it go for, you know, the 6-7 hours for this to print this plate. And in the morning, it'll be done, hopefully, unless I'm greeted with a big plate of spaghetti. But it can be done on a open frame printer. And I did have the bamboo P1P in a cardboard box for a long time. I just broke that cardboard box down last weekend.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So interestingly enough, back in the early days of 3D printing, everybody printed ABS. Nobody really did PLA. And there was a lot of FUD around PLA about like, oh, you don't want PLA. PLA is weak. Fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Okay.
Everyone was like, oh yeah, PLA is weak. You don't want that. It's crappy plastic. And there's still, even to this day, there's people that think that ABS is stronger than PLA or something, which is simply not true. Yeah. Like looking at the actual strength of the materials, PLA is stronger than most other plastics.
Mm-hmm.
unless you're at an elevated temperature, what, like at room temperature, PLA is stronger.
Okay. Is there like a modulus temperature thing?
There is, like, yeah, you can graph the modulus of elasticity versus
even with versus
temperature. Yeah, you could. The thing is that like PLA isn't going to be used in like airplanes or cars that are produced in the millions, so they're not very well studied. Yeah. If you look at like steel and aluminum, you get like gobs of information. Even ABS, you get a ton of information about because they're used in like a lot of mass production.
PLA isn't used for injection molding in the same way as ABS is. So injection molded plastic is most likely ABS, like your Legos or your whatever injection molded plastic bulk produced plastic parts are probably ABS.
Yeah.
It's been the standard for so long.
There's a couple applications of injection molded PLA, mostly like plastic silverware. That's the biodegradable stuff. Oh, that's usually PLA. I think it's more has to do with like how old the materials are, and also ABS, since you don't have to worry about it being left out in the sun and turning into a flat pile.
Yeah.
It's a lot more useful of a material.
Yeah, I dig it. I've never had that big of an issue printing ABS. But here's the thing that I might recommend for Leo. He's got these three printers, right? Mm-hmm. I take two of them and sell them and then buy myself a nice enclosed printer. Like a, you know, like a K1 or
the P1S? Flash
Forge.
Oh, yeah. The M5M.
Bro.
Yeah.
Adventure 5M Pro.
I feel like in my review, I kept saying M5 or 5M Pro. I don't know which one it is.
It can get confusing. But that might be a good tack form if he wants to print that stuff, get an enclosed printer. Mm-hmm. But even something like a P1P, like mine, I put a cardboard box over it. Or I actually built the little, you know, surround panels to go on it. And it's a fully enclosed printer now for, you know, the cost of half a roll of filament.
Mm-hmm.
It was worth it.
Yeah, it feels weird to, I mean, looking at the Ender 3 V2 is a Bowden extruder. It feels weird to upgrade that printer to a direct drive versus just getting an Ender 3 V3 SE or something. Like if you can sell it for any amount of money.
Yeah.
And then you would offset that upgrade cost to just buy, and you get a direct drive printer with all the newer benefits to it. I don't know. That's just my ease of use upgrade cost.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's a hobby, and sometimes people like tearing it down and rebuilding it.
For sure. And so if he wants to, that is a great option. But it's just interesting, the market nowadays, how much it's changed in the last year.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope that helps out a little bit there, Leo. So the next question we have, it's kind of a question that I don't think we've ever talked about before. This comes from Brad. And Brad says, I heard a guy ask about building Voron, and you guys, meeting us, recommend he go with the bamboo. But he can go with Trudon, which is a pre-built Voron. I've seen a video. There's that guy, was it YGK3D?
Yeah.
Has built a couple of those Vorons, and he seems to like them. And he sounds like he knows what he's doing. I trust that guy. You know? So, what do you guys think of that? It's kind of like somewhere between building a Voron from parts and just buying a printer and pulling it out of the box. You still have to do some assembly. There's still, you know, testing and setup.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I'm looking at their website. They have the Trudon 2.0 Pro Mini. It's a 250 millimeter pre-assembled Core XY printer that looks just like a Voron 2.4.
I think those are made by Formbot.
Okay. Well, Formbot.
Yeah, they're Formbots, which is fine.
Either way, they're pre-assembled.
Yeah.
And then there's the Vivendino Core XY fully enclosed. That's the other one that I've heard of. I think they use, like, they do a bunch of metal parts. They replace the plastic parts with metal parts. I mean, there's all sorts of options if you want a pre-built.
Yeah. Of companies using the Voron design and just selling it to you already assembled.
Is there a lot of those?
It looks like there's at least two. There's probably more if we bothered to look into it. And then there's companies that are basically cloning the Voron designs and selling them.
I thought you meant it was like there's guys in their basement building Vorons for people and charging them.
You might be able to find someone that does that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't do that, man. The printer would be like $20,000.
It would. It would be expensive.
You want me to give up a month of my life for, you know, $500? No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I just don't think so. But what do you think, JJ?
I would look at a review first before I recommended anything. Yeah. Before I bought it personally.
Yeah, yeah.
I would look at a review to see how other people have had experiences with this company.
But you know, as far as like building a Voron, you went the extra mile on that. You self-sourced
yourself. I self-sourced everything.
Yeah, that's that is a complete difference of what we're talking.
I enjoyed it, and I love the process. And if I were to build a 2.4 or one of the bigger Vorons, I would probably do the same thing, just because I had so much fun with the process of it. Because I, you know, it's the process, it's the enjoyability of it for me. But if I was like the previous question was, of someone trying to build out a print farm, would you buy a bunch of these versus just a bunch of, I don't know, Creality or Bamboo or Elegoo or whatever company you want, just buying a bunch of off the shelf printers?
Well, the nice thing about this is you can get it up and going pretty quick. It seems like, and it's, and it can still scratch the itch to do mods on it, 'cause it is a Voron.
Also to repair it like a Creality or the, most other companies, if the hot ends all go out, it's like, well, I got to order Elegoo's hot end. I got to order Creality's hot end, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that's not the case with this.
With this, it's whatever hot end I want to put on there. Yeah. I can order it and install it.
I guess you would maintain a lot of like the benefits of doing a self-built. So you would still be able to do mods, and it'd be compatible with like the ecosystem of different designs that have been made for the Voron.
Which there are a lot.
So many mods. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll go on these websites and I'll just start looking at mods just because I'm, you know, bored.
Yeah.
And 2 hours goes by and I'm only, you know, like halfway through the website. There's just so much stuff. And you start reading about it. It's like, yeah, this is cool and that's cool. Yeah, I really have to... If you enjoy the modding of printers, Voron is nice because it really, really takes care of that hunger for screwing around with electronics on a 3D printer.
Yeah.
No ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Yeah, I'm kind of getting full of that or sick of it. Depending on
you have the whole secret project
customizing
going on.
Your own secret printer.
Can you tell us about what you're not doing or working on, Nathan?
No.
All right. Fair enough. How is that going, by the way?
Well, I was just kind of taking a little break from it.
Right, that's fine.
The other week.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Just contemplating how difficult my taxes are going to be this year, because. You know,
just don't pay them.
I mean, that is an option.
Just ignore it.
It's not a good option.
It is an option. Just refuse to pay. Ask what your government has done for you. So, all right. So, like I said, I thought that was kind of an interesting question. I wish we could have gone a little further.
Yeah. Of like that, we've never tried that one. But if it worked, that could be a really interesting.
Yeah. I said that one guy did a YouTube video. I saw it a while back.
Yeah.
When he did it. And it looked pretty nice. It was a lot different than a Voron.
Yeah.
But it had a lot of the same concept, some of the same parts. It was just put together a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would push back on that as a general idea, because the Voron designs aren't necessarily designed to be efficiently manufactured.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at the Ender 3, that thing was designed the way that it was because you can take a box of parts and put it together in under an hour. Versus the Vorons, it's like, all right, let's figure out how we're going to do this today. How am I going to spend the next 8 hours and then sleep on it and then put the next 8 hours and then
that's like a full-time job? Best. You just described the best thing about owning a Voron.
Yeah.
Is putting it together. I spent probably 6 weekends all said and done doing everything on my Voron. And I thoroughly enjoyed every part of the process.
Yeah.
It's high when I first, right, that thing is a beast. It's just a beast.
Yeah. But ultimately that's why we recommended against it, because if you wanted to put 10 of them together, that's not 6 weekends anymore. That's a year's worth of weekends if you scale linearly.
And it's really not worth it. You know, when you have a machine like that, you can pull it out of the box, and from a business sense, it's a fixed cost. You know what it is going in. Mm-hmm. And then you can amortize that out over time and the number of prints and everything else. When you got these like a Voron and you put X amount of hours and, well, how much is my time really worth? There's a lot of things that are, you know, a little vague or ambiguous built into that cost. But you buy a P1P or a P1S, it's this much.
Yeah. And the like the firmware, and when you have issues with it, if a Creality K1 has an issue, you know which part to order. Like, as a business, I would want, the extruder is messed up, I order a new extruder, I pop it off, plug it in, it's ready to go.
Yep.
I don't think it's as much of an issue with not knowing what the cost is. It's about knowing what the cost is when you multiply the hourly billable rate of your time by how many hours you spent on it. And you're like, okay, this isn't a $1,200 printer. This is like a it's like a $10,000 printer, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what you end up with after you put it all together, but if it's 40 hours.
Calibration at the end of it, even like.
Yeah.
I calibrated my Voron for way long. I mean, I printed it for, it took me 40 hours to build, and then it took me 6 months to calibrate it till I liked it. Like,
yeah, but you used the hell out of that thing.
I use it all the time. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a tank.
But it took me 6 months until I really liked it, until it was a tank for like calibration and this and that and changing parts and until I finally got the extruder that I liked on it.
Either the printer got better or it wore you down until you accepted it.
Yeah. I just put a big nozzle on it and that I don't care what quality it has. Let's print 3 millimeter layers.
Yeah. As much as we like to think that 3D printers are just tools, there's a lot of psychology behind, you know, what you about it, what you like about different brands. Like, it's just like cars. If the car problem was just as simple as it's a spec sheet and it's a tool, then everyone would probably just buy the same car. But there's like 20 different brands. You get to pick and choose what you want. And there's a lot of emotions wrapped up in that.
So we got one more thing to talk about. Nathan wanted to talk about superstitions surrounding 3D printing.
Yeah, it's a big problem. I mean, every time I hit print and I walk away, it always fails. And when I just sit there and watch it for hours, it works. Or, you know, I have to always buy the same filament brand. There's kind of a fine line between superstition and controlling your variables.
Well, I would agree with that. You know, as far as like filament goes, I used Overture for a long time just because it was easy to get. I could order it on Wednesday and it shows up at my door on Thursday because it comes from Amazon.
Yeah.
Even if you order it direct from Overture, they shipped from Amazon. So it was always really quick. I never had a problem with it. I usually ordered the PLA Pro or the Plus and had really good luck with it.
Mm. I had Overture. The only Overture spool that doesn't work is a PLA Plus or their PLA Pro.
PLA Pro, yep.
And it just doesn't work.
Doesn't work how?
It would just like clog and...
That's user error.
It kept clogging on several different printers. So it's the only... It's sitting on a shelf for years.
See, well, there you go. Different people have different experiences and things.
I think it was just one PLA Pro from Overture that didn't work. So Overture's standard filament, I love it. Okay. Or their like fun multi dual color, love it. Silk, love it. Yeah.
But I think a lot of the superstitions, I don't know if I call them superstitions, but maybe misguided beliefs in 3D printing, it's because Nathan and I were talking about something, a different subject, but I was talking about how people get in an echo chamber. And if you get in one of these like a Discord, that somebody's got a very loud voice with a lot of followers, and he says something negative about something, or I did this and it caused this, even though it wasn't correct, he says it, and all of a sudden people start picking that up. And before you know it, it snowballs. And a bunch of people think the same thing when it's not really true to begin with.
Oh, you know what I mean? I think what I just said is a great example of that.
Yep.
I bought one spool of Overture PLA Pro and I didn't like that. That it could have been one bad spool. It happens. Mm-hmm. But the sample size is so small. And just because I have a loud voice and I'm complaining about it.
Oh, I didn't take it as you complaining
about
it.
No. I think it's just I wouldn't buy PLA Overture PLA Pro again. I would just buy the regular stuff. But sample size is one versus I don't know how many they sell out. They print every day.
All I was trying to say is that one person says something that's got a loud voice.
Yeah.
And a lot of people pick up on it. And it becomes a truth throughout the community, even though it's just one person's opinion. That's all I was trying to say. I think that's where a lot of stuff comes from.
I was agreeing with you with the statement. I was like, I agree. And like, it's a great example that just happened of my opinion on this.
So what superstitions were you specifically talking about, Nathan? Give me an example.
Well, there's stuff relating to like bed adhesion. Or like specific printer profiles that you have to use for specific materials, or I don't have a lot of superstitions myself. I just print but I guess I like checking all the bolts to make sure they're tight. all of this stuff is based in some kind of practical experience, some kind of print failure. And we just don't have enough data on what makes printers work, I feel like.
Yeah. I actually try to do everything. If I have success in doing something, I always try to do it again the same way.
Right.
I'll use that as like the baseline for where I am. I want to get better at it, but I'll never do it. You know, I'll try to do it that way as much as I can. Because I know it works and I know I'm going to be successful. And there's certain things that fall into those rules that you say, well, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do this anymore because this guy said that. And then I heard that guy say the same thing. Then I heard that guy say the same thing. And
right. And like a lot of it comes down to poor quality control. So JJ's experience where he doesn't like that PLA.
They might have a bad batch.
Right.
Just one spool was bad.
One spool.
Yeah, and the same thing is especially true with like 3D printer reviews. You imagine they're sending 20 printers out to 20 different people, and two of them are just awful versions of the machine. Mm-hmm. And then they'll get panned by those two people if they're going to make a video about it. And then the rest of the people are going to be like, oh, I had a great experience. This was all fun. And even with when it comes to our experience with the Ender 3 V3, like I think generally all of us like it, but that's not to say that someone couldn't get one that doesn't work. And then it's like, oh man, it's the crappiest machine ever. How could they recommend it?
Yeah.
So it all just comes down to quality control and, you know, understanding that all these machines that get sent out are different. So there's a lot of like muddied waters, I feel like, with people's opinions.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like you look at the comments for YouTube videos. Somebody likes something, and then there's 100 comments underneath how bad the product is. It's like, well, that's not the same experience everybody had with it. That's the experience you had with it. But if there's enough people that start saying it, it's not only becomes a truth, but it's actually a problem. And it probably is a truth if it's that, as JJ said, a sample size. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because yeah, interesting. Can't sample that. And I feel like what you were saying, the what works on 3D printers. I feel like I used to be more superstitious about my prints of like, oh, it's got to be this filament and it's got to be printed when the moon is in this.
See, when I go out to the garage, I got to open and close the door 3 times.
All these little things to get things to work. But nowadays, printers, I feel like, work way better than they used to. So now I'm way less superstitious than I used to be. Of like, oh, most filaments work, most this or that works. So my bucket of it works is way larger. But when spreading outside of that bucket of what works, I do get more superstitious of like, oh, maybe I need to wash it and then dry it in this method. Wash the bed with Dawn soap and lukewarm water and dry it. And
well, let me ask you this. So I know we're really getting off the subject here, but you're doing something like that and you use, you know, the Dawn and this and that. And next time you go clean your bed, there isn't Dawn, there's Palmolive. You're going to start to freak.
Yeah, I'm going to be like, oh, this is why it failed, because it's a different brand of soap that I used to wash my bed with.
Yep. And then you're going to become a Palmolive hater.
Yeah. Oh, Palmolive is horrible. Everyone stick with Dawn. They save the ducks in Alaska. That's why I like them. It's all just sample size. I think of humanity is too small. And we too much extrapolate this small sample size.
Well, I think that's enough fun for one night, and we'll leave it there. That was a pretty fun conversation. I had a good time tonight. So remember, we really need some questions and participation from you guys out there and gals, the listeners. So make sure you go to perfectfirstlayer.com, go to the submit page and ask us. And Nathan, why don't you tell everyone where you could be found?
I'm on YouTube. Just look up Nathan Builds Robots.
And JJ, if somebody wants to email us a question, how do they do it?
Emails at perfectfirstlayer@gmail.com.
Nice. And if they want to find you on YouTube, how can they do that?
And I'm on Gmail at, or I'm on YouTube at.
You're on Gmail.
I'm on Gmail, but I'm also on YouTube at just JJ Shankles.
Just JJ Shankles or JJ Shankles?
JJ Shankles.
Just JJ Shankles.
Just JJ Shankles.
All right. And I can be found at Guy's Shop on YouTube and Guy's Wood Shop on most other platforms. So thanks so much, guys. And I guess we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Bye.
See ya. See ya.